Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm glowing.
Oh, good.
We just had dessert for breakfast.
Yeah, a couple pastries.
And a coffee. I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
This is pre-crash. So yeah, I'm doing good.
Still on that sugar high.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had an almond croissant, which is my favorite. But also, it was so small.
It was very small. That's correct.
Right? So that was a little bummer, but tasted good nonetheless.
I agree.
So I'm feeling good.
Before we jump into our story this week, I wanted to remind you that over on Patreon, we have so many bonus episodes.
So many.
I honestly am blanking on the number. It's somewhere in the 40s, I want to say.
Almost 50. We should do a little something for 50.
Yeah, maybe. Know. But yeah, our patrons vote on the stories they want to hear. At the time that this episode comes out, there will be a bonus episode poll up over on Patreon. I can't tell you what it says because I haven't made it yet at the time that we're recording, but it's going to be good because they're always good. And
right,
if you head over there, you'll get access to all of our bonus episodes for only $5 a month. So it's kind of a steal, if you ask me.
Crazy.
You can binge it.
Are there ads on Patreon?
No, there are not. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
And you get our episodes early. There's a bunch of other perks. It's awesome. Check it out. You won't regret it. But anyway, why don't we jump into this week's story? Because we have a lot to talk about.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about the hijacking of the Maersk, Alabama.
Maersk.
Yes. Many people know the story of the Maersk, Alabama hijacking from the movie starring Tom Hanks called Captain Phillips, but like many movies based on true stories, the movie isn't entirely accurate. I mean, it's pretty accurate as far as Hollywood movies go based on true stories, but the movie was criticized because it wasn't like exactly what happened. So we'll get into what happened and why that is, but we'll also talk about the true story. So
right.
Let's get into that.
Also, it's crazy to me when it's like based on a true story and then people get mad because it's inaccurate. It's like, it's not a documentary. Like you're just
totally
angry at what it isn't.
Yes, but I think that people were a little bit upset at this movie specifically because they made Tom Hanks's character, aka Captain Phillips, to be like the ultimate hero. And like it made him seem like he did maybe more than he did. And like took some spotlight away from like the rest of the crew that like risked their lives to save everyone on board. So the movie centered around Captain Phillips, and there were a lot more people that did a lot to make sure that everyone lived. So I think it was more like that.
Gotcha. I understand. But come on. Like we gotta, it's Hollywood. We're gonna make a hero. It's Tom Hanks.
It's true. It's Hollywood.
Right?
It's Tom Hanks. It was a very good movie.
Yeah.
So yeah. But anyway, why don't we jump in? Because we're going to be talking about the true story.
All right.
The Maersk, Alabama was a Danish/US cargo ship carrying 101 containers of food aid from USAID, Serving God Ministries, the World Food Program, and Catholic Relief Services. The food aid was destined for people in Somalia and Uganda, Somali refugees in Kenya, and refugees in Rwanda. I'm not sure if it was carrying any other cargo, but there was definitely a lot of food aid on board, which is unfortunate, kind of, that the Somali pirates chose this ship. I guess that they didn't really, like, stop the food aid from getting where they were going. They were just trying to get ransom money. But anyway, it was, like, food aid going to Somali refugees.
Yeah, like people who really, really need it.
Yes, but that's beside the point. They didn't know what was on this cargo ship. They just wanted to get ransom money.
Well,
anyway.
Yeah, they didn't care.
No, they did not. With a crew of 23 and 17,000 metric tons of cargo, the ship, originating from Salalah, Oman, was bound for Mombasa, Kenya, after a stop in Djibouti. Piracy attacks off Somalia's coast surged dramatically in 2008, a rate described as unprecedented by the International Maritime Bureau. surpassing all figures recorded since 1991. In 2008 alone, there were over 120 attacks, with more than 600 crew members kidnapped and more than 40 ships seized, and over $30 million in ransom paid. Nearly all activity was centered in the Gulf of Aden, off the north coast of Somalia. Each year, almost $1 trillion worth of goods sailed through these waters. Once aboard a boat, a pirate had a 1 in 3 chance of getting out alive with cash. Often, millions of dollars in ransom would be literally parachuted in. One of these drops was a record $3 million.
Whoa.
So by 2009, piracy off the coast of Somalia was a severe global issue, with the number of incidents and successful hijackings significantly increasing from the previous year and threatening the global economy, disturbing trade, and endangering crews. To combat the piracy, a 20-nation task force guarded the sea lanes north of the Somali coast, but they couldn't be everywhere. In April of 2009, the pirates shifted their operations below the Horn of Africa in the Indian Ocean, attacking ships almost 500 miles from the protection of this task force, which was where they would eventually capture the Maersk. Richard Phillips was the captain on board the Maersk Alabama in early April of 2009. Of Irish descent, Captain Phillips was born in Massachusetts. He enrolled at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and planned to study international law, but transferred to the Massachusetts Maritime Academy, from which he graduated in 1979. And during his schooling, Phillips worked as a taxi driver in Boston, which isn't important, but I thought maybe gave him a little bit of grit and felt like a fun fact. You know, a Boston taxi driver?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to mess with the Boston taxi driver.
Right?
You know?
Imagine the accent.
Oh, yeah. Like East Coast taxi drivers, like
unmatched.
They just don't take any bullshit.
He's packing the car everywhere.
What?
You know, the Boston accent, pack the car and have it yad, whatever. That's what they say.
Oh, okay. I
it went
didn't
over,
understand you for a second.
Went right over the head. Anyway, it's a terrible Boston accent. I am obviously not from Boston. Anyway, Captain Phillips had sailed this area of the world almost exclusively for almost 4.5 years, so he knew how dangerous these waters could be. He said he had always told his crews that a pirate attack or a security situation was a matter of when, not if. But he always felt like they could handle it. If they planned for it and had procedures in place, they could handle it. One of the things he noticed when he took over as captain of the Alabama was the security was kind of lax. It just wasn't where it should have been. He found doors open all over the ship when they should have been locked. The engine room door, the bridge door, almost all the key points of entry for any intruders were wide open. And the pirate cages were also unlocked, which are steel bars over the ship's ladderways that come up from the main deck to the superstructure on the exterior of the ship. So after you climb up a ladder, you're supposed to lower this screen of welded bars over the hole you've just come through and lock it. These screens are designed to keep any intruders from ascending the ship to the bridge, which is like where the captain is most of the time, or all of the time. So he finds all these security issues, and he's addressing them, but at the same time, Captain Phillips also got a series of emails warning him about the elevated risk of piracy in the area they were sailing through, so the security being lax was a very big concern for him. He decided after a couple of days, they would have a surprise unannounced drill to see where his crew stood. As a captain, he was only required to do those kinds of drills quarterly, and that box had already been checked, but he wanted to make sure they were prepared for the worst. So at 9 a.m., Captain Phillips started this drill. He walked up to the bridge and announced that a small boat with 4 armed men were coming at them in a hostile manner. The drill lasted about 15 to 20 minutes, and in that drill, they learned that some of the crew didn't know how to sound the alarm, and they didn't know what their signal was. Doors weren't locked, and then they found that some of the crew didn't know their non-duress passwords. So they ran this piracy drill, and after discovering that his crew had some issues, he says that he addressed those issues, and it was good that they ran it because there were obviously some things that didn't go well.
Right.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So on April 7th, he decided to run another drill. And this time it wouldn't be a piracy drill, it would just be a different kind of drill just to keep preparing for the unexpected. But in the middle of this drill, he spotted 3 skiffs on their radar that were quickly approaching the ship.
Well, this is going to be confusing, huh?
Which was when they were able to identify pretty quickly that they were pirate skiffs. So it was a pretty good thing that they ran their drills because these boats were approaching very quickly. Mike Perry was the ship's chief engineer. His deal was to keep the engines running, make electricity, water, air conditioning. That's what the engineering department does, according to him. Pirate skiffs were closing in on them, and their protocol was to go to their stations when the pirates were 1 mile from them. Mike Perry went up to the bridge, which was when they saw the pirates were approaching with automatic weapons, and they were not going away. So they were basically sitting ducks, and he knew they needed to kick this ship into high gear, because these skiffs were slowly gaining on them. So Mike Perry told the captain that he would make the ship go faster. So he pushed the engines beyond their normal limits to increase the speed. But they weren't sure if that would be enough. It did slow down their approach a bit, but they were still gaining on them. So Captain Phillips also faked a radio communication with the U.S. military in order to scare off the pirates. Because I guess he knew that they would have had like a radio listening into their communication. So according to his book, he pretended to radio as quote-unquote Warship 237. He lowered his voice and dropped his Boston accent and suggested that a helicopter was on the way. And because of the speed the Alabama had gotten to and the potential threat of a military helicopter, the skiffs eventually turned away when they were about 0.8 miles away from the Alabama. So they were safe in this instance, but it was a very close call.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were coming.
They were definitely coming. That day, the Alabama had gotten away with it, but they knew it was only a matter of time before they came back.
Did they give the crew guns?
No, they did not have guns. So as far as like pirate prevention goes on ships, I don't think they have guns. I believe they just have like fire hoses so they can like spray the ships if they get close. They also have the pirate cages. They have like other protocols in place, but they don't have like defense in like firearms.
I wonder what the reasoning is. I mean, I guess, you know, they're not trained military personnel,
right?
You know, they're just crewmen, but I don't know. It just seems like if there's a serious, it's when, not if, 3 skiffs are going to roll up on you with automatic weapons, you might want to have something.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
No, it is a very terrifying situation. And I'm sure at this point they also felt that they wished they had that,
yeah.
But they didn't. So Mike Perry told the captain if they got another threat, the captain should call him so they can do the same thing again. Basically meaning like tell him and he'll bump the engines up to more than it should be going, because he had to like override all of the controls to make the engine go faster.
Right.
Mike Perry was a natural leader. A veteran of the U.S. Navy, he was promoted from the ranks to retire as a lieutenant commander. He joined the Navy in 1965 at the age of 17. He was deployed to Vietnam many times, and he said, quote, "I get to fix stuff, which is the only reason I went in the Navy in the first place." His crew members described him as a quote-unquote great guy, a quiet, kind of unassuming guy, but a real bad dude, which I thought was
interesting.
Fun. A bad dude.
Well, don't want to mess with him.
Yeah.
Well, he's 60 now? This is 2008-ish?
Yeah, he was 60.
That's crazy.
This was 2009. That night, Mike led the discussion on how to make this ship more secure. During that meeting, the guys were feeling good that they had gotten away. At that time in history, people were of the opinion that pirates would not dare attack an American flagship. No U.S. ship had been boarded by pirates since the 1800s. But driven by poverty and terrifying warlords, the Somali pirates were getting more aggressive. In 2009, shipping lanes paid them a fortune in ransoms, around $85 million.
Whoa.
So it brought the piracy threat up to a very high level, and also showed them that American ships were very vulnerable, so they needed to take proper precautions. On April 6, 2009, the U.S. Maritime Administration, following NATO advisories, released a Somalia Gulf of Aden advisory to mariners recommending ships to stay at least 600 nautical miles off Somalia's coast of East Africa. The Alabama was traveling around 300 miles offshore. So they said, stay 600 miles away. The Alabama was traveling 300 miles away.
Was this like common practice, or was everybody following it and they weren't for some reason?
This was Captain Phillips' judgment call.
Okay. Well, but like, what's the, why did he do that? Like, is it just quicker?
I think so. Also, the crew, from what I understand, didn't know about this email. They were going to the captain, and he made the call to travel where he was traveling because he's the captain.
So he knew about the email?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was also one of the reasons why the movie was very controversial, because a lot of the crew was very unhappy with Captain Phillips and felt like he was partly responsible for getting them into that mess.
Yeah. I mean, he knew about the email, so then he sacrificed safety for something else.
Yeah. This is like the hot button issue is like he was traveling 300 miles off the coast and he knew that he should be traveling 600 miles off the coast. And so there's like a whole lawsuit about it later on that we'll get into. But yeah. So anyway, a crew member voiced something about the fact that this was dangerous, meaning that like they were approached by three skiffs already. But the response to that was, well, you shouldn't have taken the job.
Wow. Well, still take precautions.
Well, yeah.
We're here now.
Right, exactly. You're here now. You shouldn't have taken the job if you didn't want to be in this mess, basically, is what was said. And accounts differ about that night, but the captain is not admired by all of his shipmates, is the general consensus. So Mike said, quote, he did not have a good rapport with the crew. You know, it's not a popularity contest out there. The captain always was doing his job as the captain. So tensions ran high as Mike argued that more could be done for their safety. One of Mike's major concerns was they apparently didn't have a safe room. So Mike proposed the creation of their own safe room where the crew could shelter during any pirate attack. But captain after captain was uninterested in that idea, including, it seemed, Captain Phillips. But Mike decided to go ahead with the idea of creating a safe room anyway. And I'm not entirely sure if Captain Phillips was not on board with the creation of a safe room or if there wasn't one on the ship already, because I watched quite a few different documentaries and I read a bunch of different things for this episode, like for my research. And in one documentary, it was like Mike Perry and a lot of the crew and Captain Phillips was not included in that documentary. And they're talking about him kind of in a negative way and saying that he did not want this created. And then, you know, when I'm looking at what he's saying about things, he's saying that there was a safe room on board and that he was pro safety protocols and all this stuff. So it seems like there's their side of the story, his side of the story, and it's maybe somewhere in the middle. I don't entirely know, but I do know that Mike Perry created another room for the crew to go and like shelter if the pirates were to come back.
Right. Also, his statements could gel with theirs. It's like, okay, I was pro safety protocol, which is true, but doesn't necessarily mean a safety room. And then what was your first part of the statement? You said that Captain Phillips was like something and pro safety protocol.
I think he said that there was a safety room.
There was a safety room, and I'm pro safety protocol. Does it mean he created the safety room?
Yeah, it very well could have been that Mike Perry was the one that created the safety room. He definitely did create the one that I'm going to tell you about. I'm not sure if there was another one and that everyone just chose to go into Mike Perry's safety room situation, but it's a bit confusing because it seems like a lot of the crew is unfortunately anti-Captain Phillips, and Captain Phillips has a different view on things. So,
I see.
Yeah.
So is the rationale with the safety room that you just kind of sit there and wait for them to leave?
Pretty much. You just don't want to be found. So it's like,
right,
if they have you, then they know that they can hold you for ransom and kidnap you, basically. But if they don't know how many people are on the ship, then they can't, you know,
yeah, they use can't you. Ransom you.
Right.
So if they, let's say that they found an empty ship, would they just leave?
Maybe.
I mean, I guess you can only stay on there for so long before, you know, some authority is going to get called in.
Exactly.
Especially if it's a U.S. aid ship.
Right.
The military's coming eventually.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, this night they chose a safe room, or Mike Perry proposed this safe room. But there was an issue with this safe room. There was a very visible access hatch on the open deck where, like, you're walking around.
Oh, okay, so they know that this leads somewhere.
Yeah, so that had to be sealed shut.
Damn.
So Mike asked for volunteers of anyone who could seal it, basically, and a fellow engineer, John Cronin, stepped up. And they were concerned enough about it and knew they needed a potential safe room that John welded that access hatch shut that night.
Yeah, I mean, don't waste time.
Yeah, because they knew their lives could all very easily be in danger the next day. I mean, they hoped it didn't come to that, but like, it was a very close call that day. So they're like,
yeah,
who can do this? And John was like, I can do it. And he's like, I'll do it right now.
Yeah.
So the next morning on April 8th at 6:30 a.m., Captain Phillips was in the bridge having coffee with his first mate, Shane Murphy, when both of them said the same thing. They wanted this day to be over because it was the perfect day for piracy. There was barely any wind and almost no swell. The water was like glass. And it wasn't long before Captain Richard Phillips and Chief Mate Shane Murphy noticed a blip on the radar. Right around sunrise and sunset was when 70% of the attacks happened. Shane Murphy headed outside with binoculars to try to spot whatever was on the radar visually, which they couldn't do at first until finally he could. It was tough to make out since the sun was just coming up, but it was a very small boat coming toward them at a very fast pace. It was faster than anything they had seen before. As soon as they crossed that threshold on the 1 mile perimeter, the captain sounded the alarm to bring everyone to their piracy station. Somewhere around 6:30 or 6:40 a.m., Mike Perry got the call from Captain Phillips. They could see pirates approaching. He needed to report to the engine room immediately and bump up their speed once again. At about 7, the general alarm was sounded, which alerted everyone on board to the potential threat of pirates. And that was the start of it. The men on board hustled to their stations and alerted everyone because this new threat was closing in on them very fast. ATM Reza, known to everyone as ATM, was the duty helmsman, and he said, "Holy cow, look over the side, they're right over there." The waves were flat, so there wasn't going to be any problem for the pirates to get on their ship. The vessel zoomed past the Maersk and then doubled back to pull along the left side of the ship and matched its speed. It was such a helpless feeling watching this boat approaching them so quickly. The inevitability that this was going to happen sunk in very quickly. Mike decided he would take over the ship's controls if the pirates boarded. His plan was, if they actually got on board, he would disable the ship. That way, it wouldn't be their ship. Captain Phillips ordered third mate Colin Wright to go on deck and begin shooting flares at them to try to hold them off. But signal flares were not designed as a weapon. Only a very lucky hit might set the pirate skiff on fire. Still, Wright went out on the deck to do that. And there were 4 pirates on this skiff. And they had AK-47s, so as he stood up to shoot the flare at them, he heard the pinging sound of gunshots coming right at him, so he hit the deck immediately. They were shooting at him before he could even try shooting the flare at them. Captain Phillips was just inside watching this and called to Wright, telling him to get back into the bridge. Even moving to get back inside was terrifying, because Wright was thinking if he stood up, they could shoot him if he tried to go back inside. Below deck, most of the 20 crew rushed toward Mike's newly completed safe room. At that point, nobody on the ship knew where the pirates were, just that they were approaching. Meanwhile, Colin was still trapped in the open and under fire. Anytime anyone in the bridge wing was seen, they were shot at. So he waited about a minute or so before he very quickly ran back into the bridge and then hit the floor once again. The Alabama's deck was low to the water, which made it very easy for the pirates to throw up a grappling hook and attach a ladder. In only 5 minutes, they were climbing on board. An alarm sounded, and the crew ran through the hallways yelling to each other to alert everyone that this was real. It wasn't a drill. Second engineer Richard Matthews could hear the captain over the PA saying they had pirates along the side of the boat and shots had been fired. Only 10 minutes after seeing the initial blip, the captain announced to the crew that the pirates were aboard the ship. Two pirates had made it on the main deck, and they were spraying bullets wildly into the air. Following security protocol, Colin Wright was on the radio with UKMTO, which is the 911 for the ocean, linking commercial ships to the military, and told them, "We've just been boarded by pirates." The man at UKMTO literally said, "Oh shit."
That's a great feeling.
Yeah. They initially called the, like, American piracy number, I think, and they didn't get an answer. So then they called the UKMTO, which apparently happens sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, because in their, like, I think in their drills, they make calls to the places, and the American number, for whatever reason, like, doesn't answer a good percentage of the time. So they called,
guys,
and they didn't answer.
What are we spending, like, billions of dollars on every year?
I have no idea. But the UKMTO answered, and the guy was like, "Oh, shit."
Yeah. So is this the UK's thing, or this is an international?
I think it was, like, the international one.
Okay.
Yeah. So only seconds later, the pirates stormed into the bridge with their AK-47s drawn and screaming at the men to stop what they were doing and get down on their knees. The pirate leader was Abduwali Musi. Musi was not a big guy. He looked to be about 5'7", and was around 110 pounds, and was actually only 18 years old. But behind an AK-47, he looked about 240 pounds and 8 feet tall.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. According to Philip's account, he said, "Relax, Captain, relax. No Al-Qaeda, no Al-Qaeda." And explained that it was business, just business. Business or not, Phillips tried to slow their progress down any way he could. He pretended he didn't understand them, the ship was broken, and without their knowledge, turned on his radio to sneak news to his crew. He also offered the pirates $30,000 in the safe, but that was chump change as far as the pirates were concerned.
Bro. Probably cost him 30 grand just to get there.
The pirates?
Yeah, to buy the boat and put gas in it and troll around.
Probably not. I don't think it was an expensive boat. I think it was just like a little motorized skiff.
The guns, the ammo, the grappling hook, the rope, like, you know.
Sure. I mean, it costs them money, I guess, but I think more so they're thinking, we're going to make millions off of all of you people, so $30,000 is literally nothing.
Yeah, they're like, we're not going to risk our lives for 30K.
No, absolutely not. Captain Phillips couldn't believe how young the pirates were, but regardless of their age, the gunmen had the bridge crew and the captain. Mike Perry said he was going to support the captain right up until he wasn't my captain anymore. And now that the captain was a hostage, Mike took over his responsibilities. So Mike Perry was not in the bridge. He was below deck in the engine room. And so now that the captain and the bridge crew were hostages, he's like, okay, the ship is mine now. And so he takes control over everything and he literally shuts down the entire ship. And so when the ship starts turning down, the pirates are like, what's happening? And they're like pointing their guns at everyone. And Captain Phillips is like, I don't know. It's broken. I don't know.
I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not. I don't know what's happening.
What a coincidence.
Yeah.
I mean, they're young, but they're not that dumb. But what was Perry's official title before assuming captain?
Chief engineer.
Chief engineer. Is this like, I mean, it must be secondhand guy.
About. I mean, he's like, as far as like the engine room goes, he's head guy. Yeah.
Gotcha.
One of the gunmen forced third mate Colin Wright to lower the flexible pilot ladder so the other two pirates could board. Because at this point, there's only two of them in the bridge, and the other two, I guess, were still in the skiff. So as he did that, Colin noticed his hands were shaking quite a bit, which was the first time he realized how nervous he actually was. The whole time he was thinking he wanted to grab this guy and get his gun, but the ladder had already been lowered and one of the pirates from the skiff had started climbing it and he made two steps toward him, but one of them spun around really fast and had the gun aimed right at his chest, like a foot away, which was obviously extremely scary and stopped any thoughts of him trying to be a hero in that moment.
Yeah, well, if you're gonna do it, you gotta do it sudden and quick.
Yeah, but like, you know, he's...
And there's two of them. He's so behind, you get one of them, the other is going to shoot you.
He's in front of the barrel of an AK-47. Like,
yeah.
You're going to be cautious a little bit, you know?
Oh, I would be shitting my pants terrified.
Exactly. You have the thought, but you don't exactly know. You got to pick your moments, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even then, complete gamble.
Exactly. So he's trying to, like, suss out if he can get a hold of the situation, but as soon as he has the thought, I guess they, like, sensed it, and they turn around and aim it at him. So he's like, all right, never mind.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do that. They were going to fight until they had no other options. He went as far as he could without getting killed at that point. He believed they would shoot him at any time because he felt like they didn't really have anything to lose. At that point, four pirates were on board, all of which were armed with big guns. Although they had no idea who they had captured. So they finally look over at Colin Wright and say, "What are you? Where are you from?" And finally he tells them, "We're Americans." They look at each other with these big smiles on their faces and begin cheering. They were celebrating because they knew they were going to have a big payday for the Americans they had just captured. Colin thought to himself, these pirates could bring him to Somalia as a hostage, and it could be months or maybe even years before he got home, if they didn't kill him, which was definitely a possibility. The pirates quickly struck terror into their four captives. One pirate kept jumping out of his seat in the bridge and shaking his gun at the men, just kind of out of nowhere. And they just had to be like, it's okay. It's fine. Nothing's happening.
Hey, relax, guy.
Relax. Mike was listening in on the open radio channel that Captain Phillips had opened as ATM was targeted. The gun was up against ATM's head. So one of the pirates was just holding this AK-47 up to ATM's head. And then they fired it right next to his ear to scare him. The pirate would calm down for a minute and sit back down and put his gun back to safety. And Colin, the entire time, was thinking to himself how badly he wanted to get a hold of that gun. But then all the power went off, and the pirates went crazy. As I said, the captain calmed them down as best he could, assuring them he had no idea what was wrong with the ship. It was broken. Something had gone wrong. And he was in there with them. He didn't know what was going on. Below in the engine room, Mike Perry had taken control of the entire ship. He took control away from the bridge and called his first engineer to take control of the steering. He ordered the first engineer to keep steering the ship port to starboard to basically create an undertow and suck the pirate's boat underwater. So they're moving the ship back and forth because the pirate's boat, or like the little skiff, was like attached to the side of the Alabama, just like with a grappling hook. And so the waves that they were creating by steering the ship back and forth sucked the pirate's skiff underneath it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, now they really have nothing to lose. There's no escape for them either.
That's true. But yeah, I don't know. They weren't going to leave anyway, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they can't really take them back to Somalia.
Exactly. Yeah, they couldn't take anyone with them. And they didn't have control of the ship. And they called the Navy, so.
Yeah.
Someone's coming, it's just a matter of when.
Right.
He also shut the equipment down that was never designed to be shut down on the ship, like the electricity, the air conditioning, the refrigeration, and started unplugging the internet cable. He wanted to sabotage the ship so that nobody could use it. Like, he was going to basically shut down everything they could. They were going to keep it afloat, but they were shutting everything down.
They wanted it to become a brick.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
The Alabama was dead in the water with just emergency lighting. They knew the next thing that was going to happen was the pirates were going to come looking for the other crew members on board because they didn't have control of the ship. They couldn't move or steer the ship without Mike or the crew. Meanwhile, in the bridge, the pirates were screaming at their four captives about where the other crew members were. They needed to get them in there. The captain kept telling the pirates he didn't know where the crew was. He was in there with them, so they could have been anywhere in the ship, which wasn't the answer they were looking for, which was when they had Captain Phillips stand up and get over to the ship's speakers and call the rest of the crew to the bridge. They had code words to know when everything was safe, which was dinner time, supper time. And Captain Phillips did not say those code words when he called to the crew, which let them know that it was not safe for them to do what he was telling them to. So they did not come out from where they were hiding. When the crew didn't show up, the pirates got increasingly agitated and made a simple demand. If the crew didn't appear within 2 minutes, Colin Wright would be shot. So once again, the captain called for all hands to the bridge. This time, he told them they're going to shoot somebody, Colin Wright in particular. Once again, Musi told the captain that he would shoot Colin, and this time traced out a target point on Colin's chest with his finger to show him exactly where he was going to shoot. And Colin was thinking to himself, this guy is actually going to shoot me. Colin was on his knees, hyperventilating, saying, Captain, basically telling him to call the crew again because otherwise they were really going to kill him. At the same time, Mike faced an agonizing choice. The crew was safe in their newly finished safe room. He could surrender the whole crew to the pirates or keep them where they were and risk them shooting Colin. If he gave up the crew, the pirates could use them to run the Alabama and take them all to Somalia to be hostages. Mike Perry was 60 years old, but several of them were much older than Mike. The youngest member of the crew was 30. Mike said he knew several of the men wouldn't survive 3-4 months in Somalia. It felt like an impossible decision, but ultimately he decided to protect the lives of the sailors in the safe room over the 4 men on the bridge. Meanwhile, Musi was getting angrier and was counting down the seconds before Colin would be shot. So Captain Phillips called again, saying they were going to start shooting if the crew didn't come up. He never said the safe word, though, and Colin said he was okay with that because they weren't safe.
God. It's just, that's an impossible call.
Yeah. At that point, they were down to a minute left, and Musi was saying he wanted them there now. Colin was trying to size up the pirates to figure out which one of them he could grab before he got shot. Down to 30 seconds, things were not looking good.
Yeah, I'm like, if he's going to shoot you anyway, you might as well try.
That's what he was thinking. Mike Perry turned down his radio so he didn't have to hear the bridge anymore. He felt terrible, but he couldn't dwell on it. He had to focus on keeping as many people as he could alive. When the 2 minutes were up, Musi stood right in front of Colin and ordered him to stand up. Instead of shooting him, he told Colin, you go get the crew and get them back on the bridge. I guess he decided it was too early to start killing people, or the more people alive they had, the more money they got. So he called his bluff and didn't shoot.
Ah, God, how terrifying.
Or I mean, I guess the captain didn't call his bluff, but the crew just didn't show up, and luckily he didn't shoot.
Right.
It didn't take Colin more than a second to be off that bridge. He went down the inside ladder well, and nobody followed him. He had a place picked out in his head that he would go if he managed to get away. In the darkness of the ship, Colin knew the crew who was hiding and on high alert was now his potentially biggest threat. In the darkness, he didn't want one of them to mistake him for one of the pirates and hit him over the head. So he walked very slowly down a dark hallway, saying supper time, dinner time, to let them know that he was someone safe. He made it all the way to the forward part of the ship and then stayed there.
Wait, so the pirates aren't following him?
No, they just let him go. They said, go find the crew and bring them back.
He's not coming back.
No, he said, fuck that, I'm leaving.
Absolutely not.
And he hid. Colin's distress call had made it to the U.S. Navy, and they were readying the P-3 Orion long-range reconnaissance aircraft from Djibouti in East Africa, hundreds of miles to the northwest. It was equipped with state-of-the-art sensors, and its mission was to find the Alabama and coordinate a rescue. The USS Bainbridge, a top-of-the-line destroyer, was the closest U.S. warship, and she was ordered to proceed at maximum speed and save the Alabama. But that ship was still over 300 miles away, so they wouldn't get to the Alabama for another 10 hours. So they were on their own for the time being. The pirates pretty quickly realized Colin had disappeared and wasn't coming back, so one of the pirates forced Captain Phillips to be their guide through the ship. At that point, the emergency generator had come on automatically, and Mike Perry really didn't want the pirates to have that, so he decided he would sneak out of his hiding spot and go up on the main deck where the emergency generator was to shut it down, because he had to do that, I guess, manually. But to get there, Mike risked being shot by the pirates guarding the bridge, or the ones searching the ship at this point. So as he worked his way through the tunnels and hallways through the ship, he was moving very cautiously. It was pretty difficult to hear through the steel doors, and he didn't want to open a door into a pirate. The captain was being led around the ship at gunpoint as they looked for the rest of the crew, and as they went, the captain was purposely talking very loud to alert anyone in the area. saying, no, they're not here. No, look over here. Like, oh, here's melon from this morning. Why don't you have a slice? Like, you know, whatever. Like, just doing anything he could to make noise.
How can you ham it up?
He kind of was, it seems.
In this scenario. I mean, maybe you have to just kind of like pretend like everything's okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Do you want melon?
Right. And Mike could hear that. So he was, you know, hearing Captain Phillips with the pirates. And so he kind of knew generally where they were, at least those pirates that were with him.
Right.
Mike had to hide as he went to avoid these searching pirates. And he then crept onto the main deck to disable the emergency generator. He went out on the deck and went to the emergency generator room and cut the power from the emergency diesel generator. If the pirate lookout spotted him, he would be shot dead. At that point, he was running on gut instinct alone. But now that he was out there, he decided he was going to go on the offensive.
Damn.
Yeah, Mike is hard. Like, when the crew was like, he's a bad dude, they meant it. Like,
he's a vet, you know? He's probably the most qualified to go on the offense here.
It's true. Musi, the pirate leader, had also forced...
I'm sorry, I cannot believe that he's going to... What is he going to do on the offensive?
Well, you'll find out, won't you?
I just can't believe it.
I know. Musi, the pirate leader, had also forced Helmsman ATM to guide his search for the crew. The ship was pitch black, so Mike Perry went through the dark and made it back down to the engine room, because he knows the ship very well. It was about 125 degrees down there, so he got rid of everything but a knife and a flashlight and a radio. He didn't know if he was sane to think he could fight by himself against four pirates. He hadn't seen them yet. So in his mind, these people were 6'6 and 255-pound linebackers. Mike would definitely have to step up his game and be something that he said he certainly was not. At that moment, he heard footsteps, and then the engine room door burst open. It was ATM and Musi coming down to the engine room. So he thought to himself, okay, this has to be it. He had his knife in his hand, and he had no choice but to be ready for him. His plan was to cut the pirate's throat and kill him, because he knew it was him or them. After he did that, he would quickly go kill three more.
Somehow.
Yeah. I mean, he's hyping himself up in his mind, so he's just like trying to build up.
I mean, they're in the room he's in.
Exactly. Mike crouched all the way down, and when the pirate was close enough, he launched himself at Musi. He hit Musi into the machinery, and the two began struggling with the knife in Mike's hand. He was trying to force it into the pirate's neck, but he was holding Mike off. And they were locked that way for a moment against the machinery. For a moment, he thought to himself, why aren't I hearing gunfire? It was because ATM had somehow, very skillfully, convinced Musi to search below deck without his weapon. He told Musi that he could get the crew to come out, but there was no way they would if he had a gun. He played the religion card and also told Musi, look, I'm a Muslim. You're a Muslim. I'll help you do this, but no gun.
Wow.
So there was no gun when he came into the engine room.
Oh my God. And he's the only one down there?
Yep. Just ATM and Musi. And now Mike Perry.
And he doesn't win, does he? Oh my God.
No, keep listening. Don't give up. After a few moments of struggle against the machinery, the two men went down to the ground and Mike managed to stab Musi in the left hand. Mike was on top of him, holding his right hand down, and his blade was laying right beneath Musi's jugular, exactly where Mike wanted it to go. But Mike was 60 years old at the time, and in that moment, he said he began cramping up. He started to panic because he didn't know what he was going to do. He had him, but he wouldn't for long. Which was when he remembered ATM was down there with them. So Mike called out to him. ATM jumped in, and in the beam of the flashlight, Mike spotted ATM was holding a big knife as well. He began almost teasing Musi, because now they had him. Mike called the crew, who had been hiding down there with them, because I guess their safe room wasn't far off of the engine room. So they came out of their hiding spot, and all of them captured Musi. Mike stepped away for a moment because he needed to regroup, and now the entire crew, basically, had this pirate. This group of men had Musi and were making quite a commotion. They were holding him down and had a big knife right over his head, and they weren't physically violent with him yet, but they were all very angry. Mike realized he had to get control of the situation again because he needed Musi alive for this next move against the pirates. ATM was freed, and now they had one of theirs. So Mike got on the radio and just said, "One down." That way the captain knew they got one of theirs. But Mike was totally spent. Meanwhile, the U.S. Navy P-3 had located the Alabama. However, the scanners also located a new potential threat. Pirate reinforcements were closing in fast on the Alabama. There were larger motherships filled with gunmen and attack boats that were ready to overwhelm the crew.
Oh my God.
That was really bad because the P-3 aircraft was powerless to attack against them. The USS Bainbridge was racing to get to them, but they were still over 180 miles away. So yeah, it was kind of a who's going to get there first.
Right. You need to send like a plane if you want to get there first.
The P-3 aircraft is a plane.
No, with guns. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they couldn't. It was just the Bainbridge or the pirate mothership.
Oh, God.
After his victory in the knife fight, Mike had the upper hand, so he went up on the deck. With their leader captured, Captain Phillips and the crew started to make a deal with the pirates. They basically convinced them that they could escape, and they could take a rescue boat with supplies, and they could make a trade for Captain Phillips, and they would give them back their pirate leader, and then they could go away.
Well, this is going to be a complicated handoff.
Yes, it will.
They all have three AK-47s still.
Yes, they do, but they have their pirate leader. So if they don't want him killed, then they're going to be civil about it.
I guess. I mean, like, once he's gone from their possession, how do they... I don't know. Well, we'll figure it out. I'm new to the whole hostage game.
Right.
You know?
It was dicey. This was a very dicey situation, and they all knew it.
Yeah. Well, I guess you shouldn't have taken the job.
Yeah, right?
You're kidding me?
What a crazy thing. So Mike looked over the railing and saw the captain with the two other pirates two decks below them. They were just above the steering gear room, which was where the crew was hiding. So a lot of the crew, now that they had the pirate leader, most of the crew was still hiding in the safe room. And they were there basically the whole time.
Wait, so they didn't take Musi back into the safe room?
No. So most of the crew was in the safe room the entire time. Some of the crew was helping get Musi, and they had him. But, like, majority of the crew was, like, in the safe room the whole time.
Gotcha. I guess they didn't want him to know where the safe room was.
Exactly.
Right.
So, at this point, the pirates that had Captain Phillips were on the deck directly above where the safe room was. Because, remember, they had, like, that access hatch that was on the deck that they had to weld shut. So, those pirates are directly above the safe room right now.
Whoa.
And that was when the pirates noticed a crudely welded hatch on the deck, with a ventilation pipe that opened into the space below. The pirate turned on a flashlight and pointed it down the pipe, trying to see what was below, which was when the crew noticed this flashlight shining down, so everyone inside the room froze, as they tried to hear what this pirate was doing. They also tried to quietly hide from the flashlight beam that was searching the room for them. Next, they tried the hatch, but it had been welded shut the day before by John Cronin. He had no idea that the day after he finished the job, it would save his life.
Yeah, good thing they did it that night.
Yeah. This pirate was obviously suspicious of this room that he couldn't access, and he took a step back and cocked his AK-47 and put his gun down the pipe. So he, like, aimed his barrel into the pipe. If he fired into this cramped, steel-walled room, that would be really bad. Someone would be shot, like, no doubt. Even random shots would hit anyone crammed into that small space.
How small of a space is it?
It's not big. And it's like, if he fired in there, it would just probably bounce around and hit someone. So just as he decided he was probably going to fire, a shout called him over to the rescue boat.
Whoa.
Yeah. So he's like looking in there. He's looking in the pipe. He like steps back, cocks his AK-47, points it down the pipe, and he's like, gonna shoot. And then there's like, hey, from, you know, the other side of the boat. He pulls it out and he runs over to someone who shouted to him.
Oh.
Yeah.
How crazy. Shit just happens, you know?
And that was when he learned that the batteries on the rescue boat were dead. So it couldn't be used as their escape craft. They needed another boat to use as an escape, which was when they decided they would get a fully enclosed lifeboat. To sweeten the deal, Captain Phillips also gave the pirates all the cash in his safe, which was the $30,000. So they did still get the $30,000, and they took cigarettes, and the lifeboat was carrying 10 days' worth of food rations, water, and basic survival supplies. In order to restart the Alabama, Mike needed all of the crew back at their stations, but he found them in a shocking state. The safe room was about 15 to 20 feet across, and it was not a comfortable place to be on a good day. And right overhead was a steel deck that had been in the sun, basically baking them all day long. Without power, they had no air conditioning, and there was zero ventilation. So they were basically in a microwave. And Mike said it was well over 130 degrees in that safe room.
Oh my God, you're just in a sauna.
Yes, for many hours. Heat stress, heat fatigue, heat stroke, no breakfast, no lunch, no dinner. When the crew came out of the safe room, they looked like they were dead. All of them needed to be in a hospital hooked up to an IV and needed medical care. So restarting the Alabama would not be easy. It required every available crew member to get it going. And Mike knew these men were in very bad shape, but he had to ask them to man their stations and reactivate the ship.
I'm sorry. At this point, the pirates have left?
No. They're still on the boat, but to get the boat started and to like get them on the lifeboat, they have to restart the Alabama.
Huh. Why?
They need power.
For the battery on the escape vessel?
Yeah. So I think there was like, the lifeboat was like on a ramp and they needed to like use the power on the boat to get the lifeboat off, I'm pretty sure. And then they also, once the pirates were off the boat, they needed to get away from the pirates. So they needed to restart the ship, not only to get them off, and then also to get the hell out of Dodge.
Right. Okay, so they let them go off the boat, and then what? Do they just throw Musi overboard? They're like, you can pick him up.
No. We'll find out how they did the exchange.
Oh my God.
So the crew were basically almost on their deathbeds after sitting in that safe room in a sauna for many hours.
Well, lucky that they captured him.
Yes, very lucky. But they got up and they did what they had to do. Out of the 20 men, every one of them got up and did their job. And Mike said he was very impressed with all of them. The ship was fully operational when the exchange was agreed. Mike slowly brought their pirate prisoner back up on deck. The pirates held the captain at gunpoint and the crew had Musi. And they basically faced off.
Wait, so they're face to face now?
Pretty much. I mean, still slightly away from each other, but they're all up on the deck. They loaded up the lifeboat with everything they needed, like the food, the water. They brought hammers and chisels. And the two sailors that were loading up the lifeboat were kind of looking for a chance to jump the pirates, I guess. And Captain Phillips noticed what they were trying to do. Like, he saw they had weapons in their hands, like the hammers and stuff. And he, like, gave them a look, like, do not do this.
Don't fuck this up for us,
basically,
guys.
Yeah, he like, told them telepathically, don't do this.
Guys, you got the win.
Right.
Just, you know, cross the finish line.
Right. So the two groups faced off. The pirates holding the captain and the crew holding Musi. The crew armed themselves with what they could, like tools and kitchen knives and anything. But they faced desperate men with big guns. The first mate was the closest to the captain. And he wanted the captain to walk over to them at the same time that they allowed Musi to walk over to the pirates.
No.
So it was like a true swap.
No.
But the captain knew that that would not work.
Yeah, because he walks over there and then you're back in the same situation.
So they didn't know how to operate the lifeboat, meaning the pirates didn't know. And without a crew member on board with them to run the machinery, lower the boat, and operate the boat once it got in the water, the pirates wouldn't be able to leave the ship, and that was the captain's main priority. So he came up with the idea that his crew would keep the pirate leader for a little bit longer, he would get into the lifeboat with the pirates that had him as prisoner, and he would help them lower it, show them how to work it, and then he would pull up alongside the ship, and then they would do the swap. The captain would come up, and then they would send Musi down. Captain Phillips said he knew there was a shot that they would go back on their word and keep him, but he felt like this was the only way to get them off the Alabama, so he got into the lifeboat. And the crew was not happy about this. They did not want the captain to get on the lifeboat because they knew the pirates would not stay good on their word. They're pirates.
Right. Well, I mean, do they want Musi or not? I mean, that's the thing. It's like you need leverage. And you need to exchange it at the same time.
Right. So the accounts of this next part are a little different and kind of hard to make out based on who is telling the story. So the captain claimed he got on with just the pirates who had him hostage, and then they pulled over to the side of the ship, and his crew sent Musy down, and then the pirates wouldn't let the captain return to the Alabama. But some of the crew said, before the captain got on the lifeboat, they tried to do the swap and were going to send the pirates into the lifeboat without a crew member, and just let them figure out how to work the lifeboat, but the captain insisted he go help them, so Musy was on the lifeboat with them at that point, and the captain got on willingly with all of the pirates, and they sent off, and then, you know, that Whoa. Was just kind of how it went. So I'm not entirely sure which version of those is what happened, but either way, Captain Phillips is on the lifeboat with the pirates, and they will not let him return to the Alabama.
Right. Yeah, I was like, in any case, the captain had to go back first while they still had Musy.
Right.
Then they send him down.
Right. And that was what the captain claimed his plan was, but then that is not obviously what happened in any scenario.
Right.
So the crew was very upset, but they were powerless because they had guns on them and they blocked the captain from coming back. So he went on the boat with them and he never came back. Either way, the pirates got him on the lifeboat and they kept him as their hostage. Mike said, quote, I would not have gone in to show them the controls. I would have left them pirates right in that boat. You don't do deal with tyrants. That was not a good move. The captain was a hostage on the lifeboat headed for Somalia. For the first time today, Mike had the sinking feeling of we can't get beyond this. As the captain was on the lifeboat, they could see the lights on the Alabama turning on and the rumble of the engine as the crew brought the ship back to life to chase after the lifeboat. And when the pirates saw that, they were pretty unhappy. The captain had told them that something had gone wrong with the ship. It was broken. So now they're seeing that he had lied to them, and they took that out on him. Inside the lifeboat, there was one center aisle with a couple of rows of two seats on either side of the aisle, and it was completely enclosed in fiberglass. On the aft, or the back end, was the main door, and then on the forward end, there was a small hatch on the ceiling. The person driving the lifeboat was seated slightly above everyone else, looking out some windows at the back of the lifeboat. The pirates always had two guns with AK-47s by the aft vertical door, and one guy always by the forward hatch, and then there was one guy driving the boat. All of them were always watching Captain Phillips at all times. They had a handheld radio so they could talk to the Alabama and the Navy once they got there. And as day turned into night, the tiny lifeboat was on course for Somalia. The crew attempted to use the Alabama to block its path. They could have easily raced to safety, but they all agreed they would not abandon their captain. Inside the lifeboat, tensions were rising and would continue to do so. The deep wound on Musy's hand had begun to fester, and one of the worst parts of Captain Phillips' 5 days in the lifeboat was the unbearable heat. From the moment they got into the lifeboat, they were dripping in sweat, but within hours, they were all down to just their shorts. The heat definitely raised tension. The pirates broke the boat's window to let some air in with their AK-47s, and Captain Phillips had to suggest they remove their clips before using their guns to break the window so they didn't kill anyone. Even with the broken window, it didn't help. He said it was like spending the entire time in a sauna. Captain Phillips also said it felt like there was no way anyone was coming to his rescue. He didn't think anyone knew where he was, and he figured the Navy was too far away. But even still, he knew he couldn't give up, otherwise he would die out there. He knew the Alabama would be following them at least for a little while, and somehow he got a hold of the handheld radio and managed to get a call to now Captain Shane Murphy and told him, if you see a splash out the back of the lifeboat, that's me, come and get me. He didn't have a chance to escape that first day, but after 16 hours on the lifeboat, at about 1 or 2 in the morning, Captain Phillips saw a potential opportunity to make a break for it. All but one pirate was awake. Even the one driving the boat was beginning to doze off. The only one keeping watch had gotten up to pee. He exited through the back door and was standing on the small platform just outside the back door to pee off of the boat. And luckily for the captain, this pirate was using two hands to pee. So he put his gun down.
Dumbass.
Yeah, so he put his gun down. Captain Phillips didn't think he would get a better chance than this, so he started rubbing his legs to make sure he had feeling in them before he tried to stand up. He took two strides, got to the guy driving the boat, who was dozing, and then made it out the door, pushed the pirate who was peeing into the water to the left, and then dove off himself to the right. For a second, he had a chance to grab the AK-47, but at the time, he didn't know how to operate one. So instead, he dove into the water.
At least, like, toss that in the water, too, on your way out.
That would have been a good call, but he just dove. He swam as far as he could underwater. He came up and took a breath and then did the same thing. When he came up the second time, he was completely out of breath. He turned to face the lifeboat to see how far he had gotten, and unfortunately, the pirate that he had pushed had screamed and woken up the other three pirates, so they began to pursue him. The moon was large that night, and the light from it had made his head visible in the water. As they approached him, he dove under the lifeboat and swam to the other side of it, so they couldn't see him. He did that three more times, but the pirate he pushed in was also still in the water, and the third time he had come up on one of the sides of the lifeboat, he came face to face with that pirate, who grabbed onto him and did not let go. One, because he was their hostage, and two, because this pirate was terrified to be in the ocean at night, so he had a death grip on Captain Phillips. Eventually, he managed to break away from this 110-pound pirate, but then the others on the boat began shooting at him. And so at that point, they had gotten him, and he got back on the lifeboat with them. Once he was back on the lifeboat, they were very angry with him, screaming at him, beating him with the butts of their guns, and finally tying his wrists and ankles so tightly he still has scars to this day. Not long after that, the Bainbridge made it to the Alabama, who was still trailing the lifeboat. The Alabama's radar showed another ship approaching them rapidly, and they weren't sure if this was the USS Bainbridge or the larger pirate mothership that had been spotted by the Navy. They didn't know which one would get to them first. Thankfully, it was the Bainbridge, with not a single light on as it approached them, which was a huge relief. Mike Perry said, quote, "I should have been dancing a jig if I didn't have other things to do." They all celebrated, because the USS Bainbridge was now there to protect the Alabama and to stop the lifeboat. Early in the morning, they launched two rib boats with a whole squad of specially trained Navy personnel. They brought security to the Alabama, but also bad news. The Navy told them they wanted the crew to go to Mombasa, which the crew didn't want to do because they wanted to make sure that their captain was alive and they wanted to be there for it. The Navy told the crew they couldn't protect them if the pirate mothership arrived and they didn't want to risk the Alabama. They couldn't rescue the captain and also keep them safe, so they forced the Alabama to leave. And Mike didn't say anything to anyone, he just went to bed. He didn't want to do that, but they didn't have a choice.
The Bainbridge doesn't think that they can take on the mothership?
They could. It's a warship, but their main focus right now is getting the captain off of that lifeboat alive. And if the pirate mothership shows up and boards the Alabama, they have a much bigger problem. The Alabama right. doesn't have to be there to help save the captain. They're just right. following because that's their captain and they wanted to see him be safe. But like, if other bad shit happens, that's just like a huge liability. They're like, please go. Please leave.
Yeah.
Go somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. You don't want to have 23 untrained people on board when
exactly.
you're taking on another platoon.
Right. Like, they're the Navy SEALs. I think they've got it on under control.
Are they the SEALs?
Yes, the Navy SEALs are coming. I mean, not the Bainbridge isn't all Navy SEALs, but like SEAL Team 6 is on their way.
Damn.
Yeah. This is a major operation. So once the Bainbridge is there, and they've made contact with the Alabama, and the Alabama goes away, they let the lifeboat know that they're there. And they basically come storming on in with their lights flashing and very loud horns, startling everyone on board the lifeboat. And Captain Phillips now knows that the Navy is here, which is huge news for him, because he did not think this was going to happen.
Right.
And also, the pirates are feeling a little bit of pressure.
No shit, dude. The U.S. military's here. You think you can beat the U.S. military? You're four people.
Well, they're hoping at least they can negotiate some sort of ransom.
No.
That's what they're hoping.
Not going to happen.
It was the night after the Navy got there that the atmosphere in the lifeboat drastically changed.
Really?
Yeah. Imagine that. The pirates demanded a $2 million ransom for the captain's release, and the longer the negotiations took, the more tense the situation got. The pirates had begun playing mind games with Captain Phillips. They began performing what looked like some kind of ritual, and then after 10 minutes, the leader handed his gun to one of the pirates and said, "You do it." He went behind Captain Phillips, who thought he was about to be killed. And then he heard a loud bang, and he felt blood on his head that was coming down his face. He figured out that they didn't shoot him. They told him they just hit him with the butt of their gun. But this was just one of the many mind games they played with him. One of them would just sit in front of him with an AK-47 and just dry fire at him with a grin. They just wanted to make him feel as much fear as they possibly could. They'd make him tie and untie knots over and over, talk to him about his family and how much they'd miss him when he was gone. No matter what they said or did to him, he knew he couldn't give in. They wanted to scare him and make him think that they were going to execute him. And they did this throughout the remainder of his time with them. The captain had no idea what was going on with the Navy, just that they were following. And as the days went on, he could see the pirates unraveling. He knew things weren't going well. Whether that meant him dying or them dying, he wasn't sure, but he knew it wasn't going to end well. The lifeboat continued toward the coast. After two more days of sailing, the lifeboat was within 24 miles of Somalia. But the situation was about to change dramatically. 58 hours into the standoff, a team of Navy SEALs parachuted into the Indian Ocean in the dark. They would have to rely solely on the sound from their equipment to know when to release their parachutes, and then once they hit the water, a rubber boat was sent out from the Bainbridge to pick them up. And this was Navy SEAL Team 6, the same team that took down Osama bin Laden.
So, we're not fucking around here.
No, they are not fucking around. Or the same team that would kill Osama bin Laden because this happened two years later.
Oh, it hadn't happened yet.
Yeah, it would be a few years later. With the SEAL rescue team primed and ready, the Navy made one last effort before using lethal force. After 62 hours on the lifeboat, they had to make sure they didn't get to the shore with Captain Phillips. They used fire hoses to physically push the lifeboat away, and then they used a Seahawk helicopter to block it, which was very loud and aggressive. It produced hurricane-force winds to push the lifeboat away from land and hopefully wearing down the pirates in the process. They also used the 15,000-ton USS Halliburton to block the lifeboat, and the combination of all of those things seemed to be working. The pirates were definitely unraveling. Because after 20 minutes, the pirates responded. So they did all of these things in succession, and then 20 minutes later, the pirates responded to them. And they were very agitated. Suddenly, the front hatch opened, and the pirates opened fire at the Halliburton. Which is crazy, because these are, like, warships.
Well.
And these are, like, 18-year-olds with AK-47s.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to end well for them.
Well, no, it's not, unfortunately. For them, I guess. But after 83 hours on the lifeboat, it was running out of fuel, and they were also running out of options. The pirates sent a request to the Bainbridge for food and water. That was the opening the negotiators were looking for. They would give it to them because they needed to keep the captain and them alive, but they could also use that to get information. After delivering the water and food, they got a surprising request from the pirates. The leader, aka Musi, wanted to come aboard the USS Bainbridge. Captain Phillips believed the leader was potentially giving up on the others. He wasn't sure, but that's what he said later on. He told the Navy he was injured and needed medical care. So his hand was really not doing well. And I mean, how could it in those conditions? So he was taken over to the deck of the Bainbridge for care. And the pirates were obviously getting worn down. So the Navy was hoping they would be able to use this pirate to get information while they were treating his wound. While on the Bainbridge, Musi told them they were running out of cot, which was an amphetamine-like drug prevalent in the region that helps relieve seasickness, and they were out of gas. Without fuel, they couldn't get to Somalia, and without cot, they were getting seasick. At one point around this time, Captain Phillips, who was not in on anything that the Navy and pirates were doing, told the pirates he couldn't handle the heat anymore, and he was going to jump into the water and cool off. The three pirates began screaming, and Captain Phillips got up to go into the water, and one of them fired his AK-47 up into the air and out of the top of the lifeboat, which made Captain Phillips sit back down. Things were unraveling very quickly, and the Navy had to check in on Captain Phillips to make sure that he was still alive, which he was, but the tensions were very high. So the Navy shifted its strategy and made an offer. They would tow the lifeboat and give them security. After 94 hours on the lifeboat, the deal was made, and the Navy attached a winch from the Bainbridge to the lifeboat because they didn't have any fuel. So the Bainbridge was like, okay, we'll tow you. The pirates thought that they were getting towed to Somalia. But in reality, the Navy could now control where this boat went, which was a huge success. The SEAL team positioned three snipers on the fantail of the Bainbridge. And as the winch began to pull the lifeboat closer to the ship, they were able to get more and more precision of shot placement. That way they would only hit the armed pirates and not the captain. When they attached the winch, they also gave the captain a fresh set of clothes to quote-unquote keep him healthy, but in reality it was a yellow shirt that he could wear. That way they could very easily see him and distinguish him from the pirates. And he also stayed in the same spot on the lifeboat over the 5 days so that the SEALs could avoid harming him, and they let him know that he should stay in the same seat. So he was sitting, at least in the movie, I'm not sure if it was the same in the movie and in real life, but he was in seat 15. The SEALs planned to simultaneously shoot all three of the remaining pirates in the head, but their targets were in a bobbing lifeboat. They only had one chance to get this right. They had to get a headshot. Two of the snipers had two of the pirates in their sight, but they had to wait for the third one to come into view. As soon as that happened, they could kill all three of them simultaneously. And finally, the third pirate stuck his head out of the window, since he was seasick, which was when the snipers took their shot at the same time, killing all three of them instantly. Or at least that's what they thought. They fired multiple extra shots just in case one of them survived the first shot and went after the captain, but after that, it was silence. Just after the dust settled, the captain heard a voice calling out to him asking, "Is it safe?" And then a U.S. Navy SEAL entered the lifeboat through the forward hatch. The pirate who had been driving the boat at the time had actually survived the initial shots, and the Navy SEAL who came in had to shoot him again inside the boat.
Ugh.
It wasn't until Captain Phillips was in the Navy rib boat alongside the Bainbridge being hoisted up to the main deck did he realize that he was actually alive and he had made it out of there. Abduwali Abdulkadir Muzi was sentenced as an adult to 33 years in prison.
Where?
I think in the U.S.
Really? Yeah, I was going to ask, like, what is the... Is it maritime law? Is it Somali law, since they're close to, enough to the coast? Or is it just, like, you fucked with the U.S. military and now we're trying you in America?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but he was sent to the Federal Correctional Institution in Indiana, which is a medium security prison, and was temporarily housed at FCI Hedgefield, but was then transferred to the one in Indiana. So, yep. Captain Phillips said, though his age was a controversial issue in the trial.
He was 18?
He was 18. He was sentenced as an adult. So according
to... Yeah, of course.
Yeah, a prosecutor, he gave wildly varying ages for himself, but finally admitted he was 18. Since his arrest, he has tried to commit suicide multiple times, according to his attorneys. Captain Phillips said the real heroes in the story are the military and the U.S. Navy SEALs who risked their lives to save him. Colin says, quote, "There are a lot of heroes on the Alabama, and we would have not gotten out of that situation if we didn't stay together as a crew." And Mike Perry agreed. Every one of the men stood up and did what they had to do. They were all heroes. Just weeks after his rescue from the Somali pirates, the American talent agency Creative Artist Agency, or CAA, signed Captain Phillips and auctioned off his film rights to the publishing and film industries in the spring of 2009. In 2010, his book, A Captain's Duty, was released, and the book was later adapted into the film Captain Phillips in 2009, starring Tom Hanks. Since the release of Captain Phillips, there has been controversy over its portrayal of Phillips, with several crew members claiming that he was not the hero presented in the film. According to lawsuits filed by more than half of the crew of the Maersk Alabama, the crew members claim Phillips was at least partly at fault for an, quote, insistence on being fast and making money, getting the Alabama within 250 miles of the Somali coast. The lawsuit was reportedly settled before it went to trial.
Yeah, okay. Because I remember saying earlier that he sacrificed safety for something. So it was speed and money.
Yeah, so Phillips told CNN in 2010 and in a court deposition in 2013 that he ignored numerous warnings that urged him to go farther out to sea. When asked in 2013 why he decided not to take the ship farther offshore, Phillips testified, quote, "I don't believe 600 miles would make you safe. I don't believe 1,200 miles would make you safe. As I told the crew, it would be a matter of when, not if. We were always in this area." So between 2009 and 2011, pirates from Somalia had attacked ships as far away as 1,000 and even 1,300 nautical miles, although majority of attacks were within 200 nautical miles.
Oh, okay. So then his rationale was like, it doesn't matter.
Yes. I mean, the majority of the attacks were within 200 nautical miles, and he was 300 nautical miles away from the shore. So,
yeah, I guess he probably made that calculation. It's like 100 miles. I don't know.
Well, the email was telling him to stay 600 miles away, but he was 300 away. So his reasoning was, it doesn't matter where we are. We're off the coast of Somalia or, you know, Africa, and they're out here. So we could get attacked anywhere.
Right.
But the crew saying he risked our safety, and obviously that potentially played a factor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're making it harder for them to do it if the farther away you go.
Exactly. So it was settled out of court. I don't know how much money was paid, but it was settled out of court.
Well, it's probably big.
Captain Phillips retired in 2014. And Mike Cullen and the majority of the Alabama crew returned to sea after only a few weeks, and so did Captain Phillips, but eventually retired at some point. But yeah, they all went back out to sea.
Not only that, a few weeks later?
Oh yeah.
That's nuts.
Uh-huh.
How much PTSD does Phillips have?
I mean,
dude.
Gotta have at least a bit.
You just got kidnapped, beaten, and then you just watched three people get shot in the face right in front of you.
Yeah. Let me look up how fast he went back, because...
Yeah. You just saw enough, like, horrific things for multiple lifetimes.
Yeah. Captain Richard Phillips went back to sea on July 25th, 2010, about 14 months after he was rescued in 2009. He continued working a 3 months on, 3 months off schedule, returning to the same waters where he had been taken hostage.
Wow.
Yep.
But 14 months, not weeks.
So yeah, the rest of the crew went back weeks later. He went back 14 months later.
Yeah.
So he took a little bit of time off. I mean, rightfully so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hope whatever deal they gave him for the movie rights was enough cash. I wouldn't have gone back. No way.
Yeah, I think that was probably, but I mean, that's his job. He's a captain.
Maybe he loves doing it. I don't know. But I have to imagine his book and the movie were enough for him to retire.
Yeah. And he was played by Tom Hanks, who is beloved by all. So
yeah,
it's a great movie. I watched it recently just as a refresher because I saw it when it first came out and I remember really enjoying it. And I watched it recently and it's still a great movie. I mean, I understand that it's controversial for those reasons, and I see why it's controversial, because it did portray him in a way that's like, oh yes, he's this,
I don't know,
the guy. But I mean, he still did a lot of those things. Like, it's not like it's entirely inaccurate. It's just they definitely took liberties there to make it the Tom Hanks hero type movie. So it's Hollywood after all.
Yeah, I mean it's a better story that way. But
sure,
I mean, in reality, like, Michael Perry was kind of the hero of it all,
he
right?
He did really, really amazing...
Risky
stuff, yeah.
If he didn't capture Musi...
I know.
I don't think that it would have gone a lot differently.
Oh, so different.
Yeah.
Oh my God, who knows what would have happened?
He would have been dead.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what would have happened if people would have been killed, if they would have eventually gotten to all of the crew in that safe room, if any of them would have died in there, like, because it seemed like they were already knocking on death's door in that heat room.
Right.
You know?
Well, it is what it is.
Yeah. It was a good movie, though.
I'm sure it was. I do want to watch it now, but...
Hey, I'm the captain, though.
Right.
I didn't say it at all this whole episode, right. So we had to throw it in there somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that line.
Yeah. And I do also want to say, I don't want to minimize what Captain Phillips went through or what he did himself. I do think he made a mistake ignoring those warning signs and sailing where he did, but he did go through a lot himself, and I don't want it to come off like he did nothing, because he did. Like, sure, the movie may have romanticized the idea of Captain Phillips and, like, made it bigger than it was, maybe, or, like, Tom Hanksified it, you know?
Right.
But he still did a lot, and he went through a lot, and I don't want it to come off like, you know, he didn't, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's not his fault, it's the pirate's fault.
Exactly.
You
know?
And he knew that when he got on that boat with the pirates, like, he might never come back, you know? And
that is
true. I think he probably did that, I imagine, because he thought it would save the crew, you know?
Yeah, he did say that. Like, was that a good call? Maybe not.
I mean, you try and make a good call under that type of pressure with a AK-47 to your face, you know?
Right.
Like, come on, you know, it, like, he, I'm sure he made a mistake under, like, really stressful circumstances.
Yeah, a lot of stress happening in all the...
the whole abduction and, yeah, like, yeah, the hostage taking thing.
Exactly.
It's a little stressful. Yeah, the other thing I was thinking about is they sentence Musi to 33 years.
Yeah.
What happens after that?
He gets released.
To where?
Maybe back to Somalia? I don't really know.
Yeah, like, do you get sent on a plane? You're like, see ya.
I have no idea.
Or is he just in the country?
After completing his sentence in the U.S. federal prison, Abduwali Musi will likely be deported back to Somalia. As a foreign national who committed a felony, he does not have a legal right to stay in the U.S. after his release. So his projected release date is June 20th, 2038.
Yeah, seems about right.
I can't believe he was 18 years old. He was 5'7", 110 pounds, 18 years old, but had an AK-47.
Yeah, because I remember hearing about this, like, I was, I don't know, tangentially aware of this issue when it was happening, but I didn't realize the scope of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I just, it's unfathomable to me to even begin to think about the situation that led them to do that and, you know, how you got there. Like, that's your reality.
Yeah. You know? Somalia was in a bad place at the time. I don't know. I don't know a lot about where it is now and how piracy is now and, you know, all the inner workings of their.
Yeah. I have to imagine stuff. That eventually there was so much of a military presence that it just became not worth doing. But I also have to imagine that it happens on some scale still.
I think so. Yeah. There's still very much piracy that happens.
I mean, you think of an 18-year-old, you know, they're basically still a child.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, it's how we think about it. Like,
totally. You are many years away from your brain being fully cooked.
Not that I'm saying that, like, they didn't. I guess to say that, like, they don't know what they're doing. You, like they knew what they were doing.
You still,
like,
know right from wrong.
Right.
But they are still so young.
I think that they don't really fully realize the, like, severity and scope of what they did.
Probably not entirely.
Yeah. I don't know. Cut that part out. I'm pontificating. It's not.
I don't think that's crazy to say. They're 18 years old. 18-year-olds do stupid things.
Yeah. But yeah, these ones just happen to try to go against the U.S. military. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, it is. But also, there were a lot of other pirates
doing the
same thing that were not 18 years old. These are just the ones that happened to board the Alabama.
Yeah. And then the Navy SEALs taking the 3 simultaneous shots on the water.
Yeah.
Is insanely impressive to me. Like, how do you coordinate that and get it done?
I watched an interview of one of the SEALs who was there. He wasn't the one that, like, took the shot, but he was there. And he was talking about how they train for that. And he was like, well, they do it. That's all they do. It's like they train to do simultaneous shots like that in, like, every different kind of scenario. So they've done it a bazillion times. And so they just, you know.
So they're just trained to do it.
They're so highly trained and skilled, and, like, they're the best shot out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I knew that they were elite, but
to
think about everything that has to go right and how many thousands of hours you have to practice doing that.
Yeah. That's what they do.
Yeah.
That's their whole thing. They're the snipers.
Very, very impressive.
It is insane. It's insanely impressive. So, very interesting story.
Yeah, I was very locked in for this one. Super interesting, just absolutely insane. And then, I don't know, there's like another part of me that just kind of is really uncomfortable and like, it feels gross, like how young they are, the like situation that they were in, and then the decisions that they made, and then they all just get shot in the face. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it's sad.
It's horrific on a human level.
It totally is. It's really sad. I mean, like in the movie... Obviously, in real life, we don't know what happened in the before of like the pirates' lives, but in the movie, at least, you see part of the like pirates in Somalia and like the warlords being like, hey, if you don't go out and get ransom money right now, we're gonna kill all of you, basically. And, like, that's what was essentially happening. Like, their lives were on the line too. Like, if they didn't make money, they could also, their lives were on the line. They were in jeopardy. So it was a really tumultuous time. I mean, also, there were a lot of people in Somalia that were not okay with the piracy and didn't condone that. And there was whatever, but it wasn't like it was a very complex issue.
Right, because, you know, to stop that, you need a, like, highly trained, functioning, like, military or police force, you know?
Yeah, and, like, that wasn't... It seemed like this warlord force was in charge at the time. So, like, they couldn't super help that.
Right. I mean, even if they're partially in charge, all they need is, like, a city.
Right, and I don't want to fully talk about it like I know the inner workings of that, because I don't. But it was a very complicated issue. So yeah, it is really sad that these were 18-year-olds and that's the situation that they found themselves in. But at the end of the day, that's what they were doing, and they were killing people and like holding people hostage for millions of dollars of ransom. Like, that's a really dangerous game to play, and that it's
When you make it you or other people,
right?
Sometimes it's gonna be you,
right? Exactly. So it's really tough.
Yeah, I just like once a problem like that metastasizes, it's just, I have to imagine it's incredibly difficult to fix.
Yes, definitely. But anyway.
Well, yeah, I think that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, me too. Why don't we move on to a bit of a palate cleanser and we can talk about something completely unrelated so we can go on with our days as normal. What is your good thing?
My good thing is the croissant and coffee this morning.
Oh, sure. I mean,
it was lovely.
It was.
It is some of the last days that the weather is going to be nice in Michigan, or like summer-like, I guess is what I mean.
Yeah.
So I'm soaking it up, and that was really nice. So what's your good thing?
My good thing is so stupid. I've started playing Club Penguin again. And my igloo is pretty cool. It's coming along great. I keep saying to Alex that I'm clocking in at the mine, because one of the games in Club Penguin is Mine Surfer or whatever, and it's like the one where you get the most points, so I can furnish my igloo.
Right. Yeah, no, so I was never a player of Club Penguin, so I don't get it.
I just need something where I can turn off my brain that isn't TikTok, and that's manifesting in Club Penguin.
Right. No, I'm really trying to stay off the internet.
Yeah.
Like, it is just a gateway to mental illness.
Yeah,
you know?
it's a dumpster fire over there a lot of the time. And so I'm just a penguin. Well, I have a puffle.
You do.
I do.
You showed me. It's cute.
Yeah. I'm, you know, whatever. I'm just playing a couple games. I'm not hurting anyone.
Sue me.
Sue me. Sue me. Okay. My penguin. Can I say my penguin's name? Her name is Diva Boots. If you see me, friend me. Whatever. I'll be friends with you on Club Penguin.
You might get a few.
We'll see.
Yeah. Well, lovely.
Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to check out all of our bonus episodes and get all of the perks, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. And we have a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast with a T, and that a podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.